Okay, let's see. So the title of my talk is the same as the title of the program, except it has in high dimensions at the end. So what I want to talk about two things, but I'm really only going to talk about one of them, I think. I'm going to mention the other. And this is going to be a very theoretical talk, except for some of the motivational parts. So the basic questions that I want to ask is whether or not the complexities of organismic biology, of environments, and the contingencies of all the previous evolutionary history, whether they give some simplifications that one might try to take advantage of theoretically. Okay. The part that I won't really talk about is sort of taking that that in a way that I think is slightly different than has been looked at before. The part that I will talk about is more related to other things that I think people have already talked about a bit here. So the two in particular questions which I want to ask is, one is in a constant environment, and I'm really going to be constant in the simplest situation, is everything mixed? And so there's no spatial structure, can't be complicated in interactions. Everything's mixed. As to what happens to evolution at long times. Okay, so I'm going to have one type, initially one type, and then I want to look at long times, and I ask what happens. Okay, so the standard is to think that if I look at the phenotype, so the organismic property, that this is going to go to some fitness peak. And people draw something like contours of the fitness, and they say, here's a peak, and they call this the Fisher geometric model. Nothing to do with me. Not even to do with relatives of mine. And so this is the sort of classic picture. So one can already ask a question whether or not, if you have a much more higher dimensional phenotype space, this is a two-dimensional one, and I can't draw anything more than 2D, but if you have a high-dimensional space, does it actually look like this? Right? Is it useful to think of it in terms of going to fitness peaks, even if there are many peaks, which I think everyone would agree there are likely to be many peaks. Okay. But then there's the more interesting question, which is whether or not, if you actually have this, is it true that the evolution continues without slowing, which would be much more surprising, because if the fitness is getting bigger, you would think at least it's going to slow down, even if it doesn't really get to a fitness peak. So this would be certainly much more surprising, and this has to involve something else, which is changes of the environment associated with the organism. So this is with feedback from environmental change. So why might one think that this is true? Well, there's the experiments of Rychlensky and analysis of those by Michael Desai's group that I gather no one has actually shown, that look at the accumulation of mutations over whatever it is now, 60,000 generations in E. coli in a supposedly simple environment. They seem to show that while the fitness or the effect of the ancestor is, if not saturating, at least slowing down its growth, the rate at which mutations fixed, so the rate at which the evolution continues, judging by the changes in it, seems to not have slowed down much after the initial stage. So there's perhaps some hint of something there. Okay. So this I'm not going to talk about unless I have a little bit of time in the end, in which case can make some comments. Okay. The one that I am going to talk about, and this we've heard various things about, is about microbial diversity. So I want to talk about sub-strain level diversity. So what do I mean by that? Well, people have the notion that bacterial species each do something and can do something different. If you have strains within a species, they maybe can invent different things that they do and invent some story. But by the time you get things that are very closely related to each other, it's not at all clear how much that story sort of even makes sense. So this I want to look at, where you have microbes which are closely enough related that it's not clear, or there's not a well-defined sense in which they're doing something which is qualitatively different.
Would Salmonella and E. coli be?
No, they were really much further apart. Yeah, certainly in a complex in conditions like the gut. Okay, so some examples of this. So one of the nicest one is Prochlorococcus, which is a cyanobacterium that's extremely abundant in the mid-latitudes. And there's a tremendous amount of work done on this by Penny Chisholm's group. And they see diversity in all scales. Those parts of the ocean are well mixed. Things seem to coexist. Large numbers seem to coexist together locally, okay, which are extremely closely related to each other genetically. They don't know. Some they have, the ones that are further apart, they have an idea of in which ways they differ, and they have experiments on that. But there seem to be ones that are closer and closer together that have coexisted for long enough that somehow they have to be almost, either almost exactly the same in some sense, or they have to interact in some ways that stabilizes that diversity, or at least continues the diversity. Okay, so Prochlorococcus is an example. Another one which I've looked at, which is another cyanobacteria in a hot springs in Yellowstone, where you just take one tiny sample, and you look at that sample and look at the diversity of one species, and every section of the genome you look at, you see a whole lot of diversity, closely related, and it's not at all clear why on earth there's so much there. Okay, and there's some persistence across springs and so on in Yellowstone, but it hasn't been studied in detail. Okay. And I just learned the other day that in a single pink berry, there is also a lot of diversity of one, the dominant species there, also on very fine scale. And, why is that stable? And maybe in kiwi orchards, on leaves in kiwi orchards, I guess we don't know that yet. So this seems to be somewhat ubiquitous, and the question is, why does it exist, and why is it stable? So there are various possibilities, which is like it just being entirely transient, associated with the evolution and the dynamics. But that really makes assumptions about timescales. And I'm going to ask a simpler question first: is can you have this stable in some sort of general sense without any evolution at all? Okay. So I'm going to look at simple situation first, where there's no evolution in the models. Okay.
Can you quantify substring diversity? How would you quantify it? Like when you say there's a lot or there's a little?
Well, I can start looking at phylogenetic trees based on bits of the genome, and look at things that are very close together and things that are very far apart, and I see a whole spectrum of those. This is in homologous parts of the genome and so on. So you can do people will argue about what statistical measures you should do and so on, but any reasonable thing that you look at, you'll see there's a whole lot of strains that are extremely close to each other, okay. And ones that are further apart, and there's a whole spectrum. Again, these are things whose divergence in the past is much longer than where you'll get one or two mutations coming in the genome, so it doesn't look like extremely recent divergences, but they're not long enough for them to have diverged into separate species and so on. Okay, now there's all kinds of complications about horizontal gene transfer and so on, which I don't want to get into. Okay. So I want to just ask about some of these things on an abstract level.
And you're still leaving out spatial variation.
I'm going to come to spatial. I said I want things where well mixed, so I'm going to come back and ask about spatial variations. Okay. So I want to ask in the absolute simplest situation. So I'm going to look at well mixed populations. Initially, no spatial structure. Everything is very similar. We've got no evolution, but we're going to try to make some simplifications, and the main simplification we want to make is from the complexities themselves. Okay. So what can we expect that the complexities will do? Okay. Well, any change in well-adapted organisms in an environment that's similar to what they've seen before, any change genetically is likely to have some of positive and negative effects. Right. Any change in the environment is likely to have positive and negative effects on it. any change they do to the environment themselves is likely to have, you know, positive and negative effects on the other organisms and on cells. Right? So one would guess that everything is sort of sums of positive and negative effects. And so, you know, the crudest first approximation is to assume things are, those add up to some things which are effectively random, and then one has to talk about what the statistics are of that that randomness. Okay, so I want to replace the complexities by the randomness, which is, you know, has a long tradition in physics, but also has a long tradition in ecology. I guess started by Bob May, since he's a physicist, and looking at things from that. So, and this is following from that. And I say, I think there are at least some things that Pankaj and Ned talked about or introduced introduced last week. So when you look at toy models, and the assumptions that we can make initially is that everything is deterministic. So I'm not even going to consider fluctuations in the population, so deterministic dynamics. And initially I'm going to consider no extinctions even. We'll come back and think about extinctions. Like extinctions of piece of chalk that are of usable length. So no extinctions, no spatial structure, no space. Okay. So this is basically saying that I've got large populations, and then I already said for now, no evolution. Okay. So I'm going to have a large number of different types. So alpha is labeling the type, and N alpha is the population of that of that type, and N will be someone alpha of N alpha, so it's a total total population. Okay. And I'm going to look in circumstances if they're closely related, where they're closely related together, so the total population is going to stay roughly the same, even as the types of organisms change a little bit.
So there's no spatial structure, and there's no spatial limits either, however much space they grow to.
Yeah, no. There's a fixed volume that they can occupy. So this is going to be approximately constant. They're going to, I'm assuming, the population saturated, and they in that environment. Now I can think of bringing things in from different places that have separately evolved and mixing them together, and that's actually one of the ones that's probably very relevant in real situations. But in the local bit that I'm looking at, then there is just a fixed sort of saturated population.
They're in a fixed volume. If their number changes over time and their density, you're going to assume that's not going to affect them.
No, it will affect them, but I mainly want to look at the relative effects on some of them versus the others. And they're very close together, so I would expect, you know, if the environment is fixed, then the external aspects of the environment are fixed, then those changes will not be big. And one can put those in afterwards and, you know, convince oneself they're usually not big effects. They are if you start, of course, expanding into other regions, which I guess Nelson's talked about. So, I'm really, this is the simplest simplest possible situation. In particular, going to look at the, it's easier to keep track of the frequencies, the fraction in the population. So this is the frequencies, F alpha, which is just N alpha over N, and look at dynamics of those. Okay. So what is going to be just, you know, general model for the dynamics is that, the other notation is just dot is d by dt. Being lazy. Okay, so the F alpha dot is just growth, but so this is growth at some rate here, which is going, I'm going to call it phi alpha, which you can think of as being the fitness, the difference between growth and death rate. But of course, this is going to be a function of all the other Fs, the frequencies of all the others. But I'm assuming it has no other dependence on it because I'm a fixed environment. And then in order to keep the total population fixed, I need this, where this is the mean fitness. Okay. And this is then a function of time, of course, because these can depend on time. Okay. So I'm going to say what simple forms one wants to consider for this.
Weighted by Oh, I'm sorry, it's phi alpha, excuse me.
Yeah, phi alpha. So this is the, you know, the thickness of that, the short-term fitness of that, and this is the, but depends on everything else, and this is the, I'm just the main, because I'm looking at frequencies. Okay. If you want to look at population size, well, I'll say in a second, then this is saying essentially the population is kept kept constant, and we're going to deal with these instead, which is more more conventional. So then I want to ask, you know, what things can happen. So I want to look at, you know, long times. And now I'm going to have, so the K is this type here, and I've got K types. So alpha runs from 1 to K. Okay. So I want to look at long times and what can happen. Well, the simplest possibility is that it just goes to some stable fixed point. So I just go to some stable fixed point, alpha, alpha star, which is stable. Okay. So I can say that this is some stable stable community, the community C, which is a subset of the ones that are there. So that with alpha, you know, if it's in this community, so F alpha star is equal to zero. And if alpha is not in the not in this community, then alpha, F alpha star is equal to zero, and the sum on the beta of this thing in here. That phi alpha at the star minus phi bar star is less than zero. Okay, so if I'm now, this is just saying they can't invade, right? That they've gone extinct, they can't invade. So this is the subset that can't invade.
So this,
and then this is a stable community, I could have many different communities in the potential communities in the system. It can be multi-stable and so on.
Okay, so that will depend on initial conditions. And
right. So this is the long times here, and I could have one or many communities. Okay, so that's the simplest simplest possibility. Okay, the next simplest is it goes into something which is periodic in time, so it goes into some steady oscillations, and then another one is that it goes into some stable chaos, some stable chaotic state. And those are sort of the three obvious possibilities. And it can be multi-stable. There can be different ones in these communities. Some of them can go extinct, and the other ones stay with periodic, and so on. Okay. So those are the obvious possibilities. There's another one which is slightly less obvious, but actually is quite ubiquitous. That one can call transient, entirely transient, where there is no sensible sort of limit. And this is simplest illustrated if I look at the frequencies here. So I've got three frequencies, three types, k equals 3. And I'm going to draw the dynamics in a space where this is pure 1, this is pure 2, and this is pure 3. Okay, so anything in the middle that all three exist, when I'm down here, then 3 is extinct, and so on. So on the boundaries and at the corner, of course, 2 and 3 are extinct. Okay. And the thing which is not atypical is you get dynamics like this, where it goes around, there's nothing stable, because if you sit here, it's unstable to that one. If you sit here, it's unstable to that one, but it keeps getting bigger and bigger fluctuations in here, so they get closer and closer to extinct. Okay. So this transience would lead essentially to extinctions. If you have any finite population size, okay, and then I mean a lot of things that when sort of turmoils and rest and things like that actually do that, okay. So that's one of the things that one certainly wants to be concerned with. So this isn't stable chaos; it's sort of intrinsically transient things that just keep on going. Just as a note, if you've got a log f variables, which are the natural ones, this is saying you're just getting further and further away in that.
So a variance of the scissors, rock, paper game might do this, for example.
Yeah, variance of that can do it, yeah. I mean, so typically, the way I did it? 2 beats 1, 3 beats 2, but 1 beats 1 beats 3. Yeah. Okay, so what I want to ask then is what happens if I have a large K, okay? And then I want to look at things which are sort of generic, Now, obviously, for any large k, I can put, you know, very particular interactions and so on and get any of these subsets and complications. But the generic ones, I think, one expects, is basically this either one stable community, one stable community which is large. Okay, so the size, this is the size of the community, is of order k. So some fraction of them are surviving. Okay, so that would be one stable community. Or there is can only small stable ones. Order e to the some coefficient k, a times k, stable communities, separate ones, which are all large. Okay, so I can either one or very many, one would expect with large k. Periodic ones are unlikely, just some sort of general arguments. Or I could have something which is chaotic with large k. Okay, or I could, a large number surviving, so most of them haven't gone extinct. Or perhaps I can have one of these transient states. Okay. The other possibility with the communities is that I have many, or a few at least, only small stable communities. Okay, and I could have many or a few. Could have either. Okay, so those are sort of the natural possibilities. So these are sort of diverse phases. This is a stable diverse phase. If this can exist, we don't know. Sort of generally, it's some kind of diverse chaotic chaotic phase. And this one will drive extinctions. And one has to say, how does one make sense of that?
Okay. So when you say only small c's, you mean a small total number of alternative communities, or small fractions?
No, so these are only small. These are only small communities. They only have a small number of number in the community. Okay. So this is the. I should have written down that. This is the number non-extinct.
Okay. Is this cataloging the?
Yeah, just the possibilities.
Possible solutions,
right.
And we can think of any arbitrary complexity of the what. How they interact.
You can think of, this is sort of generic in the sense I don't want to fine tune what the complexities is. Okay. And in particular, I don't want to say, okay, here's one subspecies, here's one subspecies, here's one subspecies, where the subspecies interact with themselves in a different way than they do others. Right. So I want there to be no clear subsets of this, at least initially. Okay. So I'm going to really have these, in some sense, be similar, and so there's sort of no of these k types, and I'm going to say there's no sort of subsets, no natural subsets of these. Okay. Okay. Otherwise, one can of course get one subset going up and down, the other subset going down and up, and there's just sort of diversity within those, and you're more complicated.
So you want the whole thing to be unstructured initially, right? I mean, the whole dynamics is unstructured, so there's no. Every species is sort of statistically equivalent to every.
Yeah, they're sort of statistically equivalent to each other, exactly. Yeah. So, and this is at least, so there's two ways one can think about. One is if you take species that are evolved separately in identical environments and then you mix them together, right? In which case you would expect to have that. And the other one is if you evolve from a single clone in a common environment, in which case, of course, there is some structure to it. But and then that gets into much more interesting. Situations, but I just want to think about the simplest one. And this has been, well studied, but I think there are some important bits which aren't looked at.
You want to comment on sort of the meaning of generic? So specific example, suppose let's take Claude Cavalcale.
Okay, so I'm going to go to Claude Cavalcale right now.
Okay.
So there is a sense in which Lotka Volterra is the natural possibility when they're close to each other, because in some ways it's sort of expanding around the it's expanding around the them all being similar. So Lotka Volterra is usually written in terms of the n's. So let me write it that way. So I've got n alpha dot over n alpha is some basic growth rate, And then it's often written this way as 1 minus n alpha over, I'm going to call this n tilde alpha plus, say, someone beta not equal to alpha of some w alpha beta times n beta. And I'm actually going to normalize this too. Okay, so what is this? Well, if I have only one type, so if I have alpha only, then n alpha tilde is the carrying capacity, and it'll just saturate to that. Okay, and then whether that's stable to the other ones, of course, depends upon the W's.
The W is the interaction coefficient,
yeah.
These n alpha tildes and n beta tildes are just constants.
These are just constants. So those are the properties of each type. This is the property of the type, that's the property of the type, and then this is properties of the interactions. Okay? So now I'll just have to assume something about the W's. If they're similar to each other, I would expect the W's, you know, this is negative, they obviously suppress each other if they're eating the same things, so I would think the W's would be negative as well, but of course one can have a mixture of things there. So the obvious things here is the W's are mostly negative if they're competing.
But if they're predator-prey, then they...
We're considering them being very similar. Okay.
How do you scale the mean and the variance of your W's?
I didn't say anything about statistics W yet, so...
Okay.
I will very shortly say that. Okay. So this is the simple Locke-Volterra one. If they're very similar to each other, so I can say I have some original type. So I can have a type 0, and I can measure everything with respect to that. So, for example, I can look at, I could define V alpha beta is W alpha beta minus W alpha 0. So how it interacts with beta minus how it interacts with 0, and so on. So I can do that, and then I can go to work in terms of the frequencies, and if they're similar to each other, then I get a simple dynamics, which I can just write in terms of the... in terms of the frequencies, and so I can go back and write it in terms of this, and I can look then that this will just be so I can write this here, where this is now S alpha, and I'm going to write it in this term times U alpha times F alpha. Okay, so that's the sort of differences between how it interacts with itself and how it interacts with others. And this is going to be something complicated, because this has a mixture of self-interactions, self plus with 0 plus various other things. So it can be either sign, okay? It doesn't have to be positive. Okay, this one I can think of the selective differences between the types. Okay, reference to 0, and then I've got a piece which is someone beta of V alpha beta of F beta, and then I've got a minus the average of all this thing, phi bar to keep everything constant. Okay. So phi bar is just this times F is just someone worse. Okay. So this is like a Lagrange multiply, keep everything constant if you like. Okay, so this is now, you know, it's very similar form, but one has to interpret it somewhat differently. These ones can now be either signs, because these are differences with how they interact with each other and how they interact with the reference one. And this is now, again, associated with differences. This is associated with differences. Okay, so all these are ones that can have either sign, at least a priori. Right? And so then one can go to Pankaj's question immediately and ask, okay, how big are these various things? Okay, so, you know, the answer is we don't, of course, know, but we can ask when do we get potentially something interesting. Okay, so the first statement, let's just lump this one into here. So let's do beta not equal to alpha there. So I'm separating out the self interactions. Okay, so the first thing I would say is that there is nothing special about this, right? I could have just defined U alpha is minus V alpha alpha interaction with itself, right? And so there's nothing special about it. It's interaction with itself and interaction with others. There's nothing a priori special about it. Okay? You know, conventionally, people just assume right from the beginning that there's something special about it, but there, which is if you're eating different things and so on, but that's certainly not obvious. So what about scalings? If I look at large, if I look at large k, And let's just, for simplicity, let's just keep the V's of order 1. Okay, but they're going to be random in sign, so I want the average V, say, to be 0. I can always adjust this to make the average V to be average B to be 0, but they're sort of random with the magnitudes of order 1. Okay, so these are order plus or minus 1. And then I have to ask what that looks like. What that means is if the frequencies are all comparable, okay, so if the Fs are all of order 1 over K, the total Fs add up to 1, okay, so reasonably uniform divided, and that is actually what's found in sort of most of the situations which have been looked at, which are in the sort of category. If the Fs are of order 1 over K, that implies then that the sum on the F part is of order 1 over square root of K, okay, which means that to get any balance, okay, so the S dominates, the S terms dominate, unless the S is of order 1 over root K. In other words, you need very small selective differences, right, to start getting interesting things, okay? And you need the U to be of order square root of K for it to have a big contribution, right? So U times F is small unless U is of order square root of K, okay?
This is just saying because there's not much of U compared to everything else.
Right. Right. Now, obviously, if you say that, you know, there's a lot of you compared to everything else, then this is not true. But then you have to ask, you know, does that naturally emerge from my assumption that they, you know, the way they interact with each other is roughly similar to the way they interact with themselves?
Your assumption of one, of F over 1 over K is based on...
Yeah. Thank you.
Because, I mean, most natural communities do not look at that like that at all.
But this is not a natural community in the sense of having natural community. Things that have lots of different types. Okay. If you look at, you know, sub-strain level within a natural community, then you get a lot of Fs which are similar.
Okay. One could argue extensively about that because, I mean, most ecologists, which is, you're dealing completely with community ecology here, no evolution. You've got something like a log normal distribution, right? I mean, even...
That's fit to, with limited amounts of data, and people have done very little looking at the substrain level. But decades of data on different types, right?
Yeah.
Looking at different types. So these are ones... So I'm willing to believe, maybe, that one can define enough niches to have an enormous number of bacterial species, even coexisting. What I find much more troubling is that for each one of those species, or subspecies, there seem to be a large number of variants coexisting for long times as well. Okay, locally.
Happy to have I won't derail now, but I'm happy to have an extensive discussion about the empirical data on levels of diversity, which have been studied.
I know.
Quite extensive. So,
I know. Okay, so maybe there's a lot of things for the fine scale microbial stuff that I don't know about. No, for non-microbial, this is all microbial, because then one is, you know, there's potentially much more data. I think the questions get more complicated, more interesting, maybe for macroscopic organisms. The thinking of niches and things get better. They don't know how to interact with each other and so on. So I really want this to be fine scale diversity. Okay, and it's big populations and so on. Okay.
Sorry, don't you have a self-consistency condition if U is of the order of square root of K, that then you're probably becoming a dominant species and you're no longer in the 1 over K limit?
Well, I can scale everything with these ways and then I'm okay. Okay, so if I want to just do this entirely mathematically, I can just say, okay, I just scale V in the way that these are all scale in the sense that they're all the same same order. Okay, which is what people often do. But it's not an obvious scaling. It's not completely. There's a natural scaling even. Right? It's a natural scaling mathematically. Okay, but I want to at least get beyond just entirely math. I mean, I'm doing math, but. I just want to think about these issues.
So in this simple model of very similar species, as you say, the V's can be of either sign,
right,
but they're not symmetric.
Well, okay, so now we have to talk about the statistics of the V's. Okay, so there's a parameter here. I can say the V's are a sort of random, but I have to say something about the statistics of those. The self-interactions, we can certainly allow to be different, and we, you know, would expect it to be somewhat different, but we might not expect it to be large. So we have to look at the statistics of the V's for V alpha not equal to beta. Okay? OK. Okay. So I said we can just adjust the V so the average is equal to average is equal to zero. So I have.
You say again why the sum of VF has to scale as 1/√K?
No, this is if there there's a well. Okay. So if the size of the community. I can look, I guess I should write it like this. If the size of the community which is surviving, if it's this property, which, say, with the simple, you know, all the simple models you tend to get, you get that unless you start tuning things, then I can replace these Ks with Cs, okay? So I guess what I really want to look at is when...
These being plus or minus, of order plus or minus 1, why do you sum all the Fs?
Just a random walk.
Oh, because this is random sum of things of 1 over k. I've got k over them, so 1 over root k. Yeah, sorry. Okay. So I'm going to take this 1 over k, and then I can ask, do the communities satisfy? Of course, I can have communities where a small number of Fs are there and have numbers of order 1, and that will, in fact, happen in the regime which I'm not so interested in. So I'm particularly interested in the diverse regimes, right? So where the community there is whether, you know, long-term transient or stable or chaotic has sort of order k or maybe square root of k or something like that types in it. Okay. So when alpha does not equal to to beta, I want to keep that over here. So I'm going to have v alpha beta squared. Just defined to be 1, but I want to then look at V beta alpha, right? So this is how it's correlated, how you interact with someone else and how they interact with you. So this is one you might expect would be at least naively positive. So I'm going to call this equal to theta, which is in the range minus 1 to 1. Okay, where 1 means it's, you know, symmetric matrix, minus 1 is an anti-symmetric matrix. Okay. So all the obvious things would say that it's symmetric. Okay, let me just think of the order I want to do things here.
Can you say that again? All the obvious things would say it's symmetric.
Well, the things people tend to write down, which are the symmetric, and I'm going to come to the case of what they are in a minute. But let's at this point say we're just making toy models. Let's take it to be let's take this to be a parameter and ask what happens.
That's similar to what Heinz Sapolsky did for neuroscience with a tunable symbol.
Right. And here we're certainly different things will give different amounts of asymmetry. And I say in a minute I'll go to slightly a little bit more motivations. Okay, so let's particularly if we consider the case that theta is equal to 1, so that means V is symmetric. Okay, so in that case it turns out that phi bar dt is always positive. It'll go to some overall population fitness maximum, but it could go to many maxima. Okay, so in that case you either go to a stable community. A stable community, okay, and but there could be many possible stable ones, okay. So this is now if U is bigger than some, well, let's look at the simplest situation. The simplest is if we ignore the S's. So the simplest is if all the S's are equal to zero, so they're identical except for the interactions. That's again often is looked at. Then I can say that if U is bigger than some UC, which is of order root k, okay, then you get that strong self-interactions. So this one can say this is sort of like niches because now the interactions with themselves are strong. Okay, and if they're strong, not surprisingly, if they're big enough, then you all get each one is interacting with itself. You can ignore the others, and they all coexist. The U's can be either signed, but at least all the ones with negative U, with positive U, will coexist. Okay, this you see, and so this already is looked at, you know, by May and lots of others. Okay.
I'm
not scaling. I'm making a statement.
Okay. No, but you're saying something about V's, right? They're all plus or minus 1. So as I grow the community
The V's
size,
are random.
I understand, but as I grow the community size, each species can interact with every other new thing I put in, right?
Right.
So the idea there's nothing that limits the interaction of any species with all the other species, no matter how big I get, right? That's kind of the scaling that you've used.
No, I haven't used any scaling. I'm making statements.
No, no, when you say it's a random walk with root...
I didn't say it was a random walk. I said the V's... No, Pankaj, wait, hang on a second.
Right?
Hang on a second. I said that I'm going to just set the overall scale of time by saying the V's are a 1, that the typical interaction between two is of order 1. Okay, that I'm allowed to do. That's just time scale. Okay, then I'm saying how big the other ones have to be in order for various things to happen. Okay?
So
you can then argue, does this make sense?
No, that's what I'm asking.
Okay, well, then I'm going to come to that. Okay. Yeah.
So I just want to make sure I understand ecologically what you're saying. So you're saying everything can interact with everything else, right?
Yeah, they're all mixed together.
Time scale.
Right, right.
Much faster than any resource dynamic change, because that's...
No, I can integrate out all the resource dynamics. I'll come to it in a minute.
Another way to put this, right, if I'm understanding your question, you're making the assumption that there aren't... I mean, that there aren't subsets, that there aren't, you know, large sort of regions of the V matrix which are exactly zero
okay.
or close
yes.
to zero.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get to the interesting things which are newer, so let me just make a few extra statements about here. Maybe that'll come to that context, okay? So then there is another range, and this is people are working on now, and I don't know if there's anything actually really published on it, but where U is... bigger than some UB, which is also a square root of K plus, but less than UC, but bigger than some UB, where you get very large number of stable ones, okay? Many stable communities in this case. So what happens if I go away from this case? And you can have some amount of the S's are of order 1 over root K. This persists as well.
There should be a subscript.
C.
Yeah, thanks. If I put it less than or equal to, it would have been correct. Okay, and so there are many stable, and probably, I mean, if U is less than UB, basically, they're only small communities.
Okay. UB is also about a square root of K?
Yeah. That's the natural scaling that comes in here. Yeah. But this there's not that much studied in this regime. Okay, so if I go to theta, positive, you can still get, you can set similar behavior, and even for theta less than zero, you get some of this. You can get some similar like this as well if you change the critical values and so on change around. Okay, so now we come to the question which various people have been beating on me about as to what's the realistic or at least motivated models. Okay, so what I want to then do, so the one of the simple ones, is if I say I have resources, so I have a bunch of resources. I'm sorry, I don't want resources. Throw out resources. I have chemicals, okay? Chemicals, I have Q different chemicals with concentrations I, okay? And I'm going to look, they're going to go, if I have my reference population, these will go to some, rho I saturated, if I just have type naught, okay? So that's a sort of the reference, and then delta rho I is going to be this, and then delta rho I dot is equal to minus some sort of stiffness for these delta rho I plus some on alpha of B alpha I. So this is B I alpha times F alpha. Okay, so this is the way in which the chemical I is modified by all of the types. It's again the difference between how it's modified by all the types and how it's modified by the reference one. So I can basically take average B being zero without losing much generality. And then what do I have? Well, then I want generally to have my phi to be a function of the my phi alpha is only a function of the rho I's. It's not a function of the others directly. So the interactions are via the chemicals. Okay? So that's, that I would expect. There's no direct interaction. Okay. So
the chemicals, like methane, is going to decay in the absence of any I'm just understanding.
I can have more complicated things in there as well. I'm supplying it at some rate. Decaying at some rate, I'm getting a look at deviations. So I would look at the deviations, the steady concentrations, and so on. Right. So this is all deviating around things. You can think of as going on the chemostat and things. Okay. Okay. So the absolutely general statement is that the maximum size of the C, the maximum size of the community can be stable, is equal to the number of resources. And I know that, you know, people will say it's more than that. So this is for a stable community. That you have the maximum there, unless you fine-tune things where you say there are some very small differences, which Ned talked about, which you can say, you know, evolution drives you towards where there are very small differences. But in sort of this generic sense of where all differences are small, it's not clear there's a natural way to do that, even though we obviously want to think about that. Okay. So there is, but this depends, to get to this, depends on a specific condition, and it's most easily seen if I again look, sort of expand things out, and if I say that phi alpha is the sum on I of some A alpha I times delta rho I, okay? So in that case, it's exactly like before, and I may as well set the S equal to zero, that's the least bad case. The best case, so then V is just equal to A dot B.
A is what?
So this is just some response of the growth of these organisms to changes in the conditions. So I've got two effects. I've got slight changes away from what the reference type would do that increases or decreases growth rates. And then I've got the response of the environment to changes in frequencies. So this is sort of second order, right? I've got two things going on. And so it's, you know, it's complicated. And so there's no direct interactions here. So that's one simplification. Okay, so then V is equal to this. Okay. So then the crucial thing is, what do I mean by resources? Okay. In general, these are just chemicals. You can, you know, make one which is bad for someone else, one's good for someone else, but bad for you, and so on. So there's no particular things on the sign of these, but one of the things which is natural is that, okay, resources would mean that A alpha I and B I alpha are correlated. So that the average of these is less than zero, is equal to minus, say, delta, okay, where delta has to be between which is bigger than minus one is the best you can get. Okay, so to the extent that these are resources, if they're all things you're eating, then you say the amount of things that you eat are those ones you're going to affect yourself more. Okay, but only some fraction of the relevant chemicals are things which are resource-like. So we might expect delta to be small. Okay, and then in the best case, where delta is equal to minus one, so that's pure, delta is equal to one, so pure resources, no other chemicals involved, then the maximum C is equal to Q, which is K over two. Half of them go extinct, half survive, and this is the natural scaling, okay? So this one, if you start looking now at where the Qs come in, that the relevant parameter is Q over K, so this is Q over K is the parameter, K over Q is a better one, is the parameter, and it's things as function of this. And then critical values and so on depend on this ratio, okay, as far as the V. So it's a natural limit, and it's something which very naturally gives you things which, you know, go towards the resource limit if you assume that most of the chemicals are like resources. Okay, that's what I just want to say about the stable things, and now I want to get into the more interesting stuff. So what about if I go towards things being anti-symmetric? What would give that? Okay. So what's the motivation there? Well, there's competitor or game models, I don't know what they're called. There are models where alpha and beta fight. Just compete, and one of them wins. So one of them wins, the other one loses. So this, at least naively, is that V alpha beta is approximately minus V beta alpha, or even equal to if it's strict competition model. Okay, so that's the simplest one. If they fight against themselves, they don't. Nothing happens, and you assume no basic advantage. So you've got to that. Okay. And the ideal limit there is where I can say the simplest one is if I just take this equal to this, which would be correspond to theta is just equal to minus one, and then I can set this equal to zero. So that's sort of ideal in that limit. Okay. The other one, which is much more interesting and realistic, is if I have bacteria and phage. So if I have bacteria and phage instead, then I can I can have my matrix as two parts. My bacteria eat the phage. My phage live off the bacteria. And so then I have my sort of matrix. My V ends up looking like this is the bacteria part, the phage part, the bacteria part. The phage eat the bacteria, so I have some minus the big being eaten, and the phages feed on the bacteria, so there's an F and E transpose are correlated, right? So here, which bacteria you eat and kills them, and which bacteria are good to eat is strongly correlated, and simple models would have those being equal. Okay? If those are equal, this is antisymmetric. And so it's certainly anti-symmetric correlations in there. It's still not independent, but this block structure turns out to look pretty pretty similar. Okay.
So what you're calling compete there is a predator-prey type interaction.
So this is now predator-prey. So now I've got two types. I've got two types of sort of block structure. But as I say, it turns out for quite a lot of things, it doesn't make a huge difference.
Just repeat that question. The compete that you have the top here.
No, this is their competing pairwise. They're all similar still.
But why does it competition? Doesn't that sort of feel like predator-prey?
No. So the Vs are still random in sign. So they both of them, think of it this, both of them go land somewhere. They compete. One of them takes over the local population. Then they float around. They land somewhere else. They against someone else and compete against them. And so it's pairwise competitions and then but mixing over all together. And so basically, one wins, the other one loses in each individual interaction. I don't know, what are these competition? I don't know what these are called, these models.
Exclusion?
No, it's a, but these models.
Competition coefficients.
Or something, but there's a whole, you know, there's a whole literature on things like this.
Like a zero-sum game also?
Yeah, this is a zero-sum game and so on, yeah. There's all kinds of, all
but
kinds
in,
of.
In this scenario, so the one partner gains of the presence of the other and the other one loses.
Right, because they're competing separately and then mixing back together. So it's you know, the idealized limit. Okay, however.
We would normally call it selection or prey, subspecies
though. No, it's.
But in practice, when you're doing.
So these things, terms, all have selection mixed in, and they have selection against the sort of everyone else, and then they have the specific selection and so on. So it really is the interactions here, but I'm assuming this, so the sort of overall selection things, in order to get interesting things, you have to assume they're very small. Otherwise, that dominates.
In evolutionary ecology, you would distinguish between, you know, total production or acquisition versus allocation, right, sort of thing. So,
right,
assuming everything's more or less the same, has the same productivity, that's your S.
Right. Right. Right.
The only thing that matters is how they interact.
Right. Right. Well, that dominates. But that was these, you know, square root of k's. I needed to assume they were very close to each other, which is one of the reasons why this is hard to, you know, hard to get a lot of diversity there, these scaling things. Okay. So this model, this ideal model, is exactly solvable for the statics. Okay. So there's a unique surviving community where the typical unique community, unstable community, with the size of that community approximately k over 2. About half of them survive, the other ones go extinct. The average populations, so the average of population F looks like so if I look at the number as a function of the average F, the number of those types, numbers of alphas, this looks basically like half a Gaussian. So that they are typically all the same size. There are some smaller than each other, and the rest of them are extinct. So half extinct, and the rest are like that. However, this fixed point is marginal. Everything is marginal about this model. There's a conserved quantity which you can deal everything with. You can write down the steady state distributions, and there is a parameter which basically is saying how chaotic it is. There's a temperature parameter. Okay, so when T is small, it's weakly chaotic, and T is large, it's very chaotic. Okay, and essentially this T determines how big the fluctuations are on a logarithmic scale. Okay, so if I look at T large, so now I'm going to plot log F. Okay, I'm going to plot log of one of the alphas as a function, say, of time. Okay. And this is then going to fluctuate from being quite, F's going to fluctuate from being quite large, so it'll sort of fluctuate around, gets quite small, fluctuate up again, become large, fluctuate around, and so on. okay, but fluctuate over a stable range, and this range is basically of order, I've forgotten, k times t or something like that, the range over which it fluctuates. Okay, so it's fluctuating on a log scale, and if temperature is large, you get wild fluctuations. Okay.
But now, what is temperature? Is it depends on k?
A totally artificial parameter. This model has a conserved quantity, and so I can, which is like an energy. Well, it's only conserved after you take extinctions away. What's left is there's a conserved quantity. The and this is what it looks like as a function of that.
Okay. And
so it depends on the initial condition, essentially.
Depends on initial condition, yes, yes. So this is initial condition dependent, and then there exists this family solution, and you can say something about the statics of them. You can write down all the static distributions. The interesting thing is if I look at the distribution of f, so I look at like the site, the frequency spectrum, that rho of f, you know, df looks like df over f to the 1 minus theta, where theta is very small. Yeah, sorry, okay. Okay. So this is a something which is, you know, very broadly distributed. This is a parameter which will depend on the temperature and so on, will depend on which type you're looking at, but it basically looks like this. So this is a question which is an interesting one, right? This says if I look average over a really long time, the Fs are all, you know, similar. But if I take a snapshot, I see wildly different Fs. So I will see a very broad spectrum and spread on a log scale, and these kind of power law distributions are things that, you know, people observe. Okay? So this is saying that, in fact, if you actually look at the conditional distribution of one of them, it looks identical. Sorry. If you look at the distribution of all of them together, so you look at all the joint distribution of all the alphas and take a snapshot, it's identical to neutral statistics, where with a mutation rate or migration rate, which depends on basically on what those averages, right? So this is something which produces, you know, emergent neutrality from something which is highly interactive. However, not surprisingly, this model is extremely special. Okay, it's chaotic, it's stably chaotic, sort of the unique subset that exists. They don't keep fluctuating further and further. Some of them fluctuate down far enough that you can say, okay, let's throw those out and say they're extinct if they fluctuate down too far, but basically this is a stably chaotic phase. Okay. So a question one can then ask is there a phase that's sort of like this once one starts going away from this extremely special model? Right. So is there a sort of stably chaotic chaotic phase that can exist if we start being more reasonable? Okay. Well, then of course depends on how reasonable one has to be.
Or wants to be.
Sorry?
Or wants to be.
Yeah. So I think, you know, this field one definitely wants to step as far away from worrying about what words things are called as possible. And one, you know, has to, you know, look at the various abstractions, but particularly to ask in the sense about phases. Right? I mean, we've got these highly diverse, sort of stable ecologies people have thought about for a long long times. We've got some things that maybe can sustain diversity because of spatial structure. As you know, the question is which other things exist, right? So I really want to ask about phases in systems with many very similar interacting types. And then, of course, you know, what it's got to do with reality comes later. I find extremely disturbing things are some of the ecology, the statistics of species of trees in the Western Ghats in India, I guess is where the best data sets that John Hart and a lot of others have looked at. And they look embarrassingly close to neutral statistics. You know, the overall numbers in the area, and you look as a function of the size of the region you're looking at, and you find the statistics, you know, the predictive power of the neutral things. And it's better than just fitting power laws, because in fact everything has crossovers and so on. I haven't looked in extreme detail, but it's certainly something that looks awfully as if it's ecologically neutral when we know it can't possibly be, right? They clearly interact with each other. But they've somehow have gotten themselves into this state where a lot of statistics look as if they're, sort of neutral, right? So some kind of emergent neutrality. Okay, so let's ask, can we get this? Okay, so we want to now go away from this model So I want to now say go away from being purely anti-symmetric. So I can go slightly away from this, sorry, bigger than minus one, but just by a small amount. So I want that. Maybe I want some S's. I want some small bits of S's. I'm going to allow some U's and S and so on in there as well to be able to try to maybe tune things. Okay. You can't do it within the specific class of models that I wrote down. You can probably do it, I don't know, if you start taking the phi, the way the phi alpha depends on f alpha has some very nonlinear, or sort of sigmoidal kind of behavior, but even that I'm not sure. So you can probably stabilize a chaotic phase, but only by saying, okay, the way each type interacts with itself is special. I mean, it's very special. I mean, and it's certainly you can't get it in the sort of sensible thing of where the interactions are, where they're all similar to each other. You can't get it in that. Okay. So how might one be able to get it? So the problem is, what happens is if you go away from this, it tends to everything starts going extinct. So you're left with a few, which could be chaotic, or go to a stable state, but everything else has gone, everything's gone extinct. So you don't get this this phase. Okay, so is there a way that we can try to look and add a feature and ask if we can, what happens there? Okay. So the obvious thing to do is I can go to a model where I have a mainland. Okay, and I get migration in from the mainland, and I've got my island or whatever, and the interactions are here, are just on the island, and n is just the n of the on the island, the total, and this mainland population is huge and no extinction. Well, then, of course, you can have all the species will exist on there, at least if mn is much bigger than 1. So I want this to be very small, but mn to be substantial. As long as this is bigger than 1, you basically everything will exist there, but most of them will exist at very small numbers. Okay. Now, within models that are like this, they'll mostly be at small numbers, but will have blooms. Right? So they will bloom up to substantial numbers. So if I look again at one of the log of the frequencies, it'll hang out at some very low number, but occasionally have a bloom up to big numbers.
So you're still assuming the pool in the mainland is the same K species, so you're going to re-inject.
Yeah. So this is the thing which people will often do, and you know, add something to it, but it doesn't really get at the sort of essence of the problem, which is, of course, if you have a pool that has all the species in it, and you look at one region, you're likely to sometimes see those species there. So it's sort of, you know, it's a hardly surprising statement. What you can ask at is what the averages of the Fs will look like, right? Do you see these bursts enough that you will have a chance of sometimes observing it? Or is it true that the frequency of 1 is way up, log n alpha, that log n is way up here, so you'll never see this being a substantial fraction? Now, of course, you know, you look deeply and so on, then you can see it. Okay. We don't know yet whether, say, Proococcus tends to have this property, that if you look locally, you look somewhere nearby, you look at different times, whether with the fine scale structure, you will tend to be very bursty. Well, or at least very wild up and down fluctuations. Okay. But the more interesting one can look at is, let me now look at a many-island model, so many deems. So instead of having a mainland, I want to have lots of islands, and I want to have migration from anyone to anyone. Okay. So for the physicists, it's a mean field spatial model. It's again one which has a long history. There's the V alpha. The interactions are only on islands.
Is there a tendency for migration to be higher to closer islands?
No. No spatial structure. That's, of course, one of the interesting things one would like to ask, is the one when you put in real spatial structure. Right? So with this level, I'm sort of asking, can a phase like this exist? And then I want to, of course, someone would like to ask what happens if you get to more realistic situation. There's a lot of situations where this is not unrealistic, or at least is less unrealistic than all the other assumptions I've made. So the degree of unreality. Okay. So what is this then? Well, this, I've got these interactions now, but of course I have an average population of the whole thing. So there's an average F over all of the islands, right? Okay. So I've got I islands with very large number of islands. Okay, and I'm going to assume it's so big that I don't have to worry about stochastic effects on the whole thing. Okay. So I've got some overall F. So it means my migration into any island will depend upon this overall one. Okay. Since I'm keeping with m's, let me do this n alpha. It's easier to think about numbers. So I want this m n alpha could be small or large compared to one, but I'm feeding them in. However, I want to be honest. I want to allow global extinctions.
Right? And what's little m?
Sorry?
What's little m?
Migration.
Migration. Oh. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So what I really, this is the overall one, and then on each island, I have an index I that labels the island. So on each island, I have the n alpha i's, where this labels the island. Right. So I have that on the island.
It's a stepping stone model, but with no spatial structure.
Okay, so I want to ask what happens there. But the crucial thing is I want to allow global extinctions.
On the islands, isn't the main
global extinction. There's no mainland. No mainland. Right. So what can happen? I can get that the fluctuations on one island, it's at small values. The other island gets small values as well. The whole population doesn't have enough to give substantial migrations to rescue local extinctions. Right? So I can start, the overall population can start doing, and I get global extinctions. Right. So this is something which one certainly wants to allow for, and you know one extra step of trying to go a bit beyond it.
So you're allowing for local extinctions as well. You're just not considering.
Yeah. No. I'm allowing for local ones, right? So I'm allowing local ones. I'll certainly get local ones. I'll get local ones because already in this toy model, half of them go extinct. Okay. And if I put a cutoff down here saying the n is very large but not zero. Or that even migration, if mn is not large, then you will get complete extinctions here, even before you start worrying about global extinctions. Okay.
So how does this temperature parameter depend on?
Oh, I should erase that now. Yeah.
And also, so is it the statement about, so what are you assuming about m and this correlation timescale? Or does it not matter?
But okay. Sorry. I didn't erase the volume picture then, but thank you, because now I want to go back to this this picture. Okay. So I'm going to switch this to n alpha, and the individual populations can get up to being of order n, and the smallest they'll get to if I have migration from the whole population is of order log m times the average over all the islands or something like that. Okay, so so we can get from this down to this, and so with small m and possibly small those, there's a very big range.
This is global or only?
This is local. This is on one island.
This is NLI.
Okay, this is island one.
NLI.
Yeah. Okay, so this is looking at a single island, and I want to ask, can I get a similar phase in the sense if I look at one island that looks like this? Okay. So, well, how could I possibly get something that looks like this? Well, I could get something like this if the chaos is out of phase on each island. Across the islands. Okay. So what will happen? What will happen then is it may go locally extinct or almost, but there'll be some other island in which it's big. Okay, and these bursts are enough, if they run up to of this order, one island being big can put out enough migrants to keep the other ones going. Then it'll crash, and then other ones will come up. Okay, so I can have that, but I have to have enough chances of bursting that the I have enough chances of bursting that I can that I don't get the global extinctions. Okay. So so the question is, can this occur? And this gets a little bit tricky, but I'm pretty sure the answer is correct. The answer is you can have this. So some fraction go extinct. Of order k, go globally extinct. But you get a surviving community, which is still of order K, survive globally, but they can have local extinctions, but not global. Okay. And there's a really subtle balance here. The subtle balance is that in order to come in from one island to the other and burst, you're being driven by the dynamics of everything that's there. Right? So when you're down here at small numbers, your interactions with yourself, they're there, don't matter. It's just the interactions with all the other ones that are big numbers. Right? So the other, if I look at the other types on the same island, there's, you know, ones going like this and so on, right? And then there's this here and things. And you're only, if you're coming in at some time point here, it's only your interaction with the big ones that matter. Okay. Daniel. So and that's, you know, it can be roughly chaotic. So it's going to drive, it may be on average it'll increase on and or average can decrease the your numbers coming in.
So if the migration is too large, they can become synchronized, and then this doesn't happen anymore.
Yeah, if the migration is large enough, very large, then you can drive drive to be things to be synchronized, and then you actually, ironically, then if you literally go to these models, then most of them go globally extinct. So you're actually being preserved by the low levels of migration because you can have this bursty dynamics. Yeah.
Why doesn't your criterion depend on capital I? I would have thought that K.
No, I is very large.
Yes, and K is very large, and their ratio.
I is much bigger than K.
Thank you.
But that's So I is large enough that I don't have to worry about by chance local extinctions on every island.
So you're basically saying that
same time.
Times with it's certain that you won't go extinct. I mean, the probability of going extinct by chance is very small.
Yes, exponentially small in I, at least I think so. Yeah. Okay. There is, you know, as in any population, you know, with some fluctuations in it, there is some probability going extinct. Then the question is, what is the relevant number? And, you know, it's a complicated combinations of things, but I is certainly enters.
Somehow, shouldn't K, the number that survived, typically be dependent on other parameters?
K is the total number that were there from the beginning.
Yeah, but it seems to me that I could put in too many species, that some... Right. A fraction of them would go extinct, leaving something that was less than of order K to begin with.
Well, okay, so this depends then on how I'm going away from this toy model, how much S's am I putting in and things like that. Okay, so I have to be in regimes where those effects are not enough to drive everything extinct, to drive it down to very small numbers. So how many I will get in the subset will depend upon some of these ratios which have scalings. They're not quite square root of K because they also involve log of migration rate factors and so on. So there are other factors that come in. Okay. But at this point, I mean, the question, can I get this phase, which is with a lot of diversity, then the parameters on how many really survive will depend, of course, on the various other parameters and distributions and things. Okay. But what I claim is that this phase does exist. If I put a new migrant in, so I put a new species in, rather surprisingly, even if on average that species is driven down its population, so its average fitness in the pool of all the others is negative, it can still invade, as long as it's not too negative. Okay? And this is the balance of exponentially rare things, but exponentially big effects when you have a burst. Okay, so the invasion process is very complicated. The invasion probability is very low, but it can still invade. Some fractions can invade, even if, on average, they're driven towards being extinct. They will stabilize at small numbers, which will depend on the migration rate and so on. But a substantial fraction will be there at big numbers, and those will dominate the dynamics. Okay, so at this point, this is conjecture, but various, you know, arguments on it, and, you know, numerics support this, at least in, you know, the simplest range of the models where, you know, it's preferable, it's favorable for this, I'm only tuning the quantities which are of the ones that, you know, most destroy the single island phase.
In classic models of metapopulation coexistence,
yeah,
you typically get, I mean, these are you're not in the large K regime. You're usually focused on one or two species.
Right.
And properties of coexistence that get you coexistence are a trade-off between dispersal and compatibility.
Right.
You see something like that emerging out of, you haven't made any assumptions about the total S, but you have some two, some that your V or your alpha can change.
No, okay. So now there's you getting into the really interesting questions of if this now evolves.
Yeah, but I mean you've got some dynamics here, so.
But my V's are fixed. They're dependent on the external environment and what types I have. Right. So my V's are fixed. The S is the selective finds of one another are fixed. The migration rate's fixed. Every island is equivalent. Right. So it's a simpler situation. As soon as I put islands being different from each other, different types can coexist.
Is there preferential extinction of some types over others?
Yes. Some will go extinct, and not others. It does depend on the initial conditions. But there's a range where it's not strongly dependent on initial conditions, and you can reinvade ones if you have a faraway mainland that you're allowed to retry ones and so on. Then you can I guess I don't know if there's a unique sort of stable set then, but it's there's certainly a lot that sort of tend to exist together if you're near to this special point. Okay, so it looks as if the invasions can have this, and this phase, let's say, if this still very preliminary analysis is correct, can actually exist. Okay, so
arguing that if you don't want to go extinct as a community, you should try and form these islands, even if they're not realized.
Well, so of course, so this now gets to the interesting questions. So one of the questions immediately is, let me go away from island structure, and I have some spatial mobility. So instead of having islands, I have everything is a function of space. So I've now got my my ends or my frequencies are now a function of position in space. And I now have some rate at which I go from J, at which I go from point X to point Y, which can be short range or more realistic is long range, moving things around. And then I want to ask, so now I've got some spatial structure, and I want to ask, can something like this continue to exist? And at least sort of naively, it seems that it could. How diverse it is not clear. And part of that is so there's an issue which has been thought about quite a lot of times in pattern formation community and so on, and Boris knows orders of magnitude more than I do, which is about deterministic equations looking effectively as if the dynamics is chaotic, non-Hamiltonian systems and so on. And in this case, it's sort of chaotic enough that various things look like effective diffusion. This process actually isn't diffusive. This is super diffusive, the bouncing up and down here. But so up to sort of things like that, as to whether you're sort of chaotic enough and not too chaotic, which are problematic. Then you start putting spatial things in, and the sort of local chaos come together. At least naively seems that you could get this to this kind of thing to persist. Okay. Now again, you may be more fine-tuning and things are needed of parameters.
If you have quenched random island sizes and space comes in, what about quenched randomness?
Well, of course, then you can have arbitrary amount of coexisting to begin with, right? Because each thing has its own stuff.
And that planet becomes
very
simple.
Right. So the So this is this is one question just within the models. But the much more interesting question is whether you can whether evolution can drive you towards states like this. And a lot of people have looked at whether evolution can drive you towards states, stable states with a lot of coexistence with resources and so on. And I guess, Ned, you talked about this And so, people come to different conclusions, including that, with simple models, it tends to drive you away from that, and you tend to get sort of generalists taking over and so on. It depends a lot on the assumptions about the space in which you're operating, what kind of phenotypic changes you allow, right? So this is crucial, is you need to worry about the phenotypic space that you can evolve in, okay? And what constraints there are and so on that. And there, I think there is almost nothing general known. The The other problem, which I'm not talking about, has that character in it. It's looking about with sort of no assumptions about phenotypic space and constraints. What can we say when you've got one type at a time that's evolving? Okay, so without diversity, but the evolution. So this is a bit here, but one can do something with just within the simple models. Is I can start with a model like this in a regime where it seems to be able to stabilize a lot, and then I can ask, let me just start throwing in new species. Okay, so I'd rather start with it having a modest number, you know, 5 or 10, and then start throwing in new ones. And I can either throw those from the same ensemble of random parameters, or I can make slight changes in the one I've got and ask what happens. Okay? So not surprisingly, often you just drive a whole lot of extinct, and nothing happens, and then you add one, you maybe have two for a while, and it goes back to one, and so on. So it's boring. But it looks as if is a parameter range where, on average, as you add another one, it's more likely to stay than it is to kick out another one. And so it looks as if you can get in a phase where the number of types, so if I look at this number of types as a function of time, with this, the size of the community as a function of time, you know, it starts as something small, you add one, but that makes it crash down, you add another, that stays, another goes like this, but then on average, it will do this. Now, sometimes it can do that, it can have crashes. Right, which is one knows can happen in many situations, and then it'll come back. And so you have to ask, is there a parity regime where on average the number increases? And it looks as if there is, but again, that depends upon assumptions about what distributions and things are. Okay. So, and I don't know how much people have explored that for sort of really simple models with where you're adding. Where when adding things, how easy it's to get into phases like this, where you're adding things, or do you need to put in, a lot of assumptions, or maybe you just need to put in some, reasonable caricature of the biology. Right? I mean, really, one would like this to have the, metabolism and so on, but, for things like Prochlorococcus, I mean, they're metabolically pretty similar. Okay, but I think the best chance this has of being, a sort of plausible model are in things like Pleurococcus, where there are phages around. People have said for a long time that phages, populations are, you'll get diversity intrinsically, it'll favor diversity. But simple models often don't do that. One phage and one bacteria come to be stable. So the phages do have a tendency of attacking whoever is popular and bringing them down, and then someone else comes up, and the new phage comes up, and so on. So they have this kind of chaotic dynamics. But whether such a phase can then sort of stabilize and so on is not clear. So I think that's sort of the best, sort of potential application that you can have this sort of thing driven not by the direct interactions, but by the phages. And then there's, again, natural models of sort of the interactions of phages and bacteria, and natural models of how one would think about those evolving.
The natural system for studying this is from an isogenic. It's just exactly the same sort of stuff that all of us experimentalists do, which is an isogenic clone. And then you're asking how many new strains evolve over the course. I mean, because then, in a sense, you'd have to make some reasonable assumptions about what distribution of interaction space you're drawing a new clone from. But I can tell you that in all of the experimental evolution literature, diversity always evolves. It doesn't always skyrocket.
But it always comes in. Yeah.
It always increases.
Right. And this is one of the things, that's so striking from even the controlled microbial evolution experiments in nominally constant environment, that they tend to start getting some diversity in them. If you do very stressed things like Coulter-Finkel's experiments, then you get a huge amount of diversity and evolves and so on. And I
but it's also not true that it explodes.
Maybe because
we don't know. We don't know if it explodes.
Let me ask a practical question. I mean, we can certainly continue some discussion over coffee and so on. If you have, do you have like a whole sort of discussion of this, of all these evolution models, then we could have another session in this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon for those who are interested.
Well,
if we're just...
So I think I don't have more to say in this context. The one which I would is this continual evolution one of whether you, you know, with sort of natural, you know, sort of simple assumptions, whether you tend to continue evolving, which also then can continue to, you know, to produce and evolve diversity from that. But it's sort of a different...
So we could discuss if people category. Are interested, we could maybe set up an afternoon session for that.
Yeah.
Well, I've also got data on, you know, the evolution of diversity.
So then it's...
That would be great. That would be great. I'd love to hear that.
So let's do that. But
It'd have to be the day because tomorrow's not today's good. I'm leaving on...
Okay, let's talk now over coffee and set something up, but let's get coffee now, and then we'll pick up with Tony.
I'd love to see the data.
When are we starting?
Let's say 10 past.
10 past.